pretenders show success. All for one and one for all. Unity means solidarity. Yeah. United we stand. Divided we fall.
No. Welcome back to another exciting edition of the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, proudly brought to you by GorillaMedia.co.nz, New Zealand's alternative media. My very special guest, Clint Richardson, joins us now via Skype. It just recently crashed, so let's hope that it doesn't pull an economy on us. Clint, welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you very much, sir.
Give us a breakdown, mate. I'm dying to know just who you are, because I bring a whole lot of people on this show that I quite frankly do not research, but I've had them recommended by listeners to this show, and they say they are freaking fantastic, and you've got to interview them. I'll be listening in. So I'd love it if you could explain why.
Are you saying that someone said that about little old me?
Yes, someone did.
Wow, I'm truly honored to whoever that person happened to be. Well, what we talk about, basically, I'm really not anybody. I'm just a kid. I was in Hollywood doing sound for some movies and games and stuff, and kind of had a crisis of conscience realizing that I didn't want to do that anymore because I was contributing basically to the propaganda machine. And had been studying and researching sort of the alternative news, whatever you want to call it, for many years. And as I was leaving, I decided that I was going to put my skills to a little bit better use. And I basically do sound design, where I put the sounds in all the things that happen in movies, do voiceover, and that kind of stuff. So I actually called up a guy named Walter Burian, who is the preeminent person... And just about the only person really out there who's talking about what's called the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report. Now, this sounds on the surface to be one of the most boring subjects in the world because we're talking about financial accounting, essentially. And it is basically the...
Not something, financial, not something the Federal Reserve does very well. Oh, wait. No, in fact, they do it perfectly.
Well, yeah, that's the crazy part is good old Ron Paul out here is calling for an audit of the Federal Reserve. And it turns out, and he knows very well, that the audit of the Federal Reserve is actually the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report or the financial statements of the Federal Reserve, as well as the federal government. And the over 230,000 different governments within the United States. Collectively, you take all these 230,000 entities from state governments to county governments to what we call municipal corporations, which are cities and townships, and in New York they're called boroughs. And you have collectively governments, essentially, like sort of like grains of sand in a cup. Each grain is an individual part of the main collective government. And you put all those grains in a cup, you have government. So, likewise, in California, there's about 18,000 different governments. Again, school districts, pension funds, you know, you name it, they're all government individual entities. And once I contacted Walter, told him who I was, we made a documentary together. And then I went on to start making my own documentaries, and lo and behold, here I am now. Honestly, wasn't expecting to be a radio show guest. I just had to get it out of my system. And because I've been studying these CAFRs, these Comprehensive Annual Financial Reports, I all of a sudden have become a person that people come to.
You've become the mother CAFR.
It's strange because I've actually got, I've got senators and congressmen and also a couple city council members who've actually called me and asked me to explain their government to them, which just to me is so ironic because I have no financial background whatsoever. I just looked into it and couldn't get enough and said, oh my gosh, I see trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars that government's hiding from the people in these investments accounts and funds. And so, you know, I had a guy call me from just a couple cities down from me in Highland, Utah, called me and asked me to look at his report. And so we looked at it and we found about $10 million in funds, which he didn't know about. And, you know, it's a town of 15,000 people. So basically each government, whatever it tells you, it is lying to you because you are only looking at the taxpayer budget, which is just a small portion of the comprehensive report, the financial statements of government. So there's a little background for you.
And was there a website in there?
Well, Walter's website is CAFR1, CAFR1.com. My website's the movie can be viewed at thecorporationnation.com. And it's, you know, everything I do is for free. So I've yet to make a cent or ask for a cent for what I'm doing. So because this is just, you know, it needs to be out there. My blog, actually, it's Reality Blogger. And Blogger has one G, so realityblogger.wordpress.com, and there's just a whole plethora of information up there. So,
why does it have the one G? It's like realityblogger.com.
Don't give me that. You know, I tried to get the regular blogger, but it just was already taken, so I improvised, all right?
Oh, mate. Well, hopefully the other reality blogger isn't talking about reality, so in reality doesn't get in line for the hits.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. You probably rank higher on the Google searches than it. In fact, you were like number one when I searched your name. So there you go.
There's a black basketball player that kind of interferes with my name, Clint Richardson, that interferes with my Google searches. But other than that, yeah, it'll come up.
Yeah. Well, this is the interesting thing, though, is that when you become an authority on something, it's not necessarily because you've got all this background or whatever. It's because you've actually done something. Okay, how many other people looked into this? None. You know, it's like how many people made a documentary film about it? None. And I can't wait to see it, quite frankly.
It's true. Well, you know, and I'll warn you, it's not a Hollywood production. It's just me talking with pictures and actual reports that you can actually see for yourself. And part two is actually almost done, so that's going to come out, which is completely based on the pension fund system, which will probably shock you because, you know, you're in the Australia-New Zealand market there. I mean, you guys have the superannuation funds, which are the same thing as our pension funds. It's just a funnel for taxpayer money. Amazingly so.
I would call it a, it's kind of like when a thief steals something big, he puts a little to the side so that he can steal it later when he comes back. And that's what the Social Security and all of these big funds that we all channel our taxpayer money into is they're just these big bags of loot that they're pumping up that they're going to steal later.
Yeah, basically, you're actually right on. You're one of the few people I think that actually understand that truth, because literally all it takes is a bankruptcy. I mean, we've seen it many times with private corporations like you know, your General Motors and that sort of thing. You just takes a bankruptcy and all of that money that's in the pension fund, and that includes all the money that people are actually putting out of their paychecks that actually work for government, that's all gone because people don't understand that there's no equity in the funds that you're contributing. They actually call it a contributory pension fund, and there's also non-contributory, which means it's all taxpayer money. But if you're contributing something, you're giving it away. It's really in the language. A contributory pension fund means that you are contributing your money to the government, trusting that government to invest that money and basically at retirement pay you a certain amount. It's almost like a savings account, really. You're getting a certain amount back.
Whoa, that money
is not yours.
Well, it's kind of like, be that as it may, the side issue is it requires trust in the government. I'm like,
yes. I mean, that's really what we're talking about. Isn't that scary? I mean, that's what it's all based upon. If you read the fine print, of course, but most people don't do that.
Well, you know, I haven't seen any society turn out very well when they had absolutely trust in their Führer.
Well, you know, it's funny. We're the same. We're the same system. I mean, you know, basically the government gave up all power in Germany to the Führer, and we did the same thing back in 1933 with the Act of 1933. As soon as Franklin Delano Roosevelt became president, according to our very Constitution, which we just worship here, which is ridiculous, but you know, it says in the Constitution that all the powers of the Constitution can be suspended. The congressional authority of Congress can be suspended, and all power can be given to the president. It's called the War Powers Act and the War Powers Authorities. In this case, he declared a state of emergency. The Constitution was suspended and has been suspended since 1933 because that state of emergency has been declared and redeclared and redeclared. People don't know that we don't have a constitution. We don't have a constitutional republic. We have a corporation in lieu of our government here, and people just don't understand that. And to talk dirty about the Constitution, it's a taboo here. And yet, I read the Constitution, and I actually put the words together, and I can see that the Constitution actually is a dirty, dirty document. It actually takes all of our freedoms away. It doesn't give us anything. So, I mean, we can go into that if you want, but it's frightening when you look at it. It actually makes slavery legal. It doesn't make it illegal.
Well, since when was slavery illegal in the first place? I mean, it doesn't. Just like the Third Reich morphed into the Fourth Reich of the U.S., slavery formed itself into covert slavery. You know, it does. It's like in Transformers, bro. The power can't be destroyed; it can only be transformed.
Well, yeah, and you could call it just, you know, we could think of Rome, where you look at the Roman pictures of all these guys, Plato and Socrates, and you see that they are very white. You know, they're not these Semitic Italian looking type of people. They're very much look like the people that are in power today. So Rome, I think, is just a moving construct. It's not really a city. It wasn't a city. It was a class of rulers who each had slave states, and that's just moving from area to area, and it just happens to be in the United States right now, and who knows for how long it's going to be here.
Well, I think that if we're going to get rid of it, the question becomes how to get rid of it. And my answer would be any way we can.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, my friend, right there with you.
So in that case, if it's any way we can, it has to be every way we can. And what I find interesting is that, you know, you had skill, you were doing sound in the film industry or whatever, and you translated those skills in the evil industry for doing good, right?
Well, and I don't want to pat myself on the back, but that's what I really am trying to get to make people understand, is that's what's need to happen. That's really what needs to happen, because when we consider what government is, because the largest, by far the hardest question that I can answer is who is the shareholder of government. We know government is the main shareholder of basically every corporation on earth, and I'm speaking of the United States Corporation, but we don't understand who the shareholder of government is. And it turns out, really, that, you know, people say they use the word they are screwing us, they are doing this to me, they're taking my home, they're, you know, but it turns out that they are really we. It's the people that are government. And when you get into government, you have two choices. You can be like me and say, hey, wait a minute, I'm not going to take part in something that's getting ahead only by harming other countries, other people, other businesses. I refuse to do that, and it's taking all the wealth of the people. Or you can see what it boils down to is opportunity. Hey, I can start a fund. I can build up billions of dollars in that fund. I can assign myself a tax-free, tax-exempt expense account in the, if I'm a senator or a congressman, meaning millions upon millions of dollars in that tax-exempt expense account, and I can then buy property all over the world in my name. I can have a pension fund for the rest of my life because I served as a senator. But the problem is people are screwing each other because there's no ethics left in government. There's no ethics, morals, values, whatever you want to call it. They're gone because if you have them, you cannot succeed in government or in the corporate world. If you have that type of value system, you understand the problem. There's no way that, and you're against what these people are doing, there's no way you can really participate in that system, that government system, which is just devoid of any type of morals or ethics. You can't. You have to drop out of it. Of course, these people, you know, think it's somehow normal that we're in that state, that you have to hurt other people to get ahead, that you have to charge interest, that you have to, you know, buy up every house that you can and charge people outrageous amounts of rent instead of letting people buy their own homes. I mean, we're in such a bad state and we're doing it to ourselves. And that's probably the most important thing. And that goes back to what you just said. People really need to have developed their conscience again, because if we don't, we're doomed. We're eating ourselves like the snake that eats its own tail, the Ouroboros. We're in a sorry state right now.
Yeah, well, it seems to me that it was the hardcore religious sort of presence that was existed back in the day when all these morals and before all these morals and ethics got eroded, because the whole baseline of morals and ethics was bore out of generations of parents reading the Bible to their children, you know? And it's like, it seems like we're living in a real satanic age, doesn't it? You know, the Pentagon, the 50-some-odd pentagrams on the U.S. flag. It's a real devilish detail.
Oh,
you're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We'll be right back.
Look at me, driving and I won't stop. And it feels so good to be alive and on top. My reach is global, my tower secure. My cause is noble, my power is pure. I can hand out a million vaccinations, I'll let them all die in exasperation. Have them all healed from the lacerations, have them all killed by assassination. I can make anybody go to prison just because I don't like them. And I can
Welcome
do what
back.
You feel no I have it all under my command because I can guide a missile.
We're back live. Broadcasting live from the future, in fact, from the fabulous island-chained nation of New Zealand with the fabulous fluoride head capital, Auckland City, as our home base with its enormous Masonic pinnacle right in the middle of it, like a gosh darn hypodermic needle jutting out into the perfect crisp blue chemtrailed sky. Welcome back. To the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest, Clint Richardson from realityblogger.com.
The worst part is that I have to say, oh, and that's with 1G, because otherwise you won't find it.
Marketing, mate, marketing. All right. There's going to be ways around
that. That is my weak point, I will tell you that.
You need a producer.
Mm.
Yes. Now, when we talk about the economy, we talk about slavery. And in my opinion, what's really going on just at this particular point in time is they've removed the protections on huge amounts of speculation and fabulous debt that can be created out of nothing that caused the first stock market crashes that, you know, came along and caused the Great Depression. And they've made a bubble so much larger in proportion and scale than the Great Depression could ever have conceived of, where, incidentally, 10 million people starved to death in the United States, is my opinion, as my knowledge. And at the moment, they're just about to burst that bubble and crash the world's economy, make everybody destitute, take up all the real assets off of everyone with all that fantasy debt, and create a new world order. That's my opinion.
But yeah, and I'm here yelling from the mountaintop. You know, I'm Copernicus trying to, you know, tell people what's really happening. Because if there is what you're referring to, this global crash, this global, you know, or even if it's just within the United States, it is a completely false, completely contrived event. It has nothing to do with the reality of the situation. Because, again, you know, I'm using the United States for the most part because that's what I've been studying. But what we're talking about, you know, we shouldn't be looking even at money, the actual amount of money. But it's there. What we should be looking at is what government has done with that money. So government, through these investment funds, and each government has its own set of funds, its own investments. And we are talking real estate. We are talking stocks, bonds, securities, derivatives. You go on and on and on. But the two most important things in my mind are actually real estate and stock. Because what you find over and over is that government is literally, or I should say institutional funds, which if you look at who owns the stock, if you pull up any stock from, you know, whichever site, you'll see that institutional funds is always, without a doubt, the major stockholder. And institutional funds simply means government funds, basically. I mean, you and I can get into these funds, but with our little measly thousands of dollars or even millions, we're talking about trillions, which is a million million. So really, you know, the people investing in the stock market is it's almost a joke to these guys. So, and what you find, unfortunately, is that government owns the stock market too. The stock market, really, it's not some random thing that's happening. It's a company. It's a corporation. All the corporations that have evolved around it, like Barclays and Moody's and all these, the government owns those corporations through stock investment. They're publicly traded corporations of which government has massive controlling stock interest. And we can take that onto anything. You want to know who owns Walmart? Hey, guess what? Government owns Walmart. You want to know who owns Bear Stearns, J.P. Morgan, Chase, all of the banks, Bank of America, the banks in your country? All you have to do is pull up these pension reports or the actual holdings list of each state, and you will see that our government in the United States, with its trillions, I mean, you know, over $100 trillion in investments, okay, owns J.P. Morgan Chase. J.P. Morgan Chase is one of the banks, actually, that is always on the top 10 holdings list of every government. You've got Microsoft, Apple, JP Morgan Chase, Bank of America, the pharmaceutical companies and the oil companies, including BP, ExxonMobil, Chevron, all of the main corporations, the Fortune 500 corporations that you're used to hearing about. You can see government owns them. And just to back up what I'm saying, I'm just going to go to one report, which is a pension fund report. And it is the New York pension system. So let's see what the top 10 holdings of the New York pension system is. And remember, this is one pension system in a state with many pension systems. So this is just one individual government. All right, ExxonMobil. Right, ExxonMobil is the one that had that massive oil spill called the Exxon Valdez. Was it cleaned up? No, not really, because that would have cost money. And since government owns that company outright through stock investment, it's its main shareholder, it's not going to force Exxon to clean up the spill. That would hurt the bottom line. It's not going to force BP to do anything because government has controlling stock in that. So let's go down the list here. Top 10 holdings for the New York pension system. ExxonMobil Corporation, as of March 31st, 2009, so it's actually gone up since then. But ExxonMobil, 18,125,000 shares at a market value of $1.2 billion. Not million, but billion. One government out of 230,000 governments across the land here has $1.2 billion stock investment in ExxonMobil. Okay, if that alone doesn't explain what I'm saying, I don't know what will. AT&T, the big phone company, international phone company, 22.2 million shares at a market value of $560 million. Johnson & Johnson, 10 million shares at $549 million. Microsoft Corporation, 28 million shares, $526 million worth of stock. Chevron, the other big oil company out here, 7.6 million shares at $517 million worth of, and it goes on and on and on. Procter & Gamble, IBM, Walmart. Very important to understand that Walmart is a government corporation. In fact, I don't really call them government corporations. I call Walmart a government weapon. It's an arm of government. They're putting Walmarts in store in cities that have absolutely nothing. There's 2,000 people, and they put a super-duper massive, wonderful Walmart there, and all the other businesses go out of business. They're killing the economy slowly by their investment-held corporations. Here's the California State Teachers Retirement Pension Fund, which is actually the second largest pension fund in the United States. ExxonMobil, again, at the top, 17 million shares, 17.8 million shares with a market value of $1,017,000,000. Okay, this is as of June 30th. But then what I wanted to get to is here's JP Morgan Chase, all right, the big bank that everybody blames everything on. 14.6 million shares held outright by this government at $534,759,000. All right.
Well, can I just extrapolate here? Let's say, for example, the Fortune 500, this is just wild speculation, is basically a whole bunch of partly government-owned corporations that wind up destroying the country by design.
That's, yeah. You got it.
Okay. Great. Now we understand what we're dealing with.
Right.
Because Mussolini had a quote that I think is quite appropriate, is that fascism should be more correctly termed corporatism, because it's when the corporations take over the state. That's fascism.
But wait a minute now, because we got to realize this is not corporations taking over. This is government taking over the corporations. That is actually
the end. That's actually okay. So it's communism then.
Well, no, I think that's actually the correct term for fascism is state controlled capitalism. That's really, I believe, what fascism boils down to.
I thought communism was state controlled capitalism, and fascism was corporate controlled statism.
Well, you know, we'll
have to... But the end result is the same. There's no real
difference. I disagree, because it would mean that each corporation has a share in government, but in this case, one entity, which is government, has the controlling share of all corporations, both national and international. Now, let's take an example here. We all just in America, you know, the people I know anyway, just go nuts that everything we own, everything we have now is made in China. It's poorly made, you know, very, very, very horrible quality stuff. Well, the truth of the matter is that America, through these investments, has been investing in China and all the third world countries, for years now. The reason that all these third world countries, your Bolivias, your Mexico, all of these countries have been building and building, and all of a sudden they're manufacturing. You know, the truth of the matter is, those are American companies. Those are American companies who they're moving their manufacturing over to China and other countries because there's no pollution regulation. There's no, they can hire child slave labor there. They can pay less than $1 a day for their work. They can't do that in America. They can't do that in Europe, but they can do it in these other countries. And so what I'm trying to get people to understand is quit complaining that your products are made in China, because they're made by America or Europe or whatever. In China, they're not made by Chinese companies. They're made by American manufacturers over in China. So why is this allowed to happen? Well, again, if government owns Walmart, owns Toys R Us, owns all of these corporations, naturally government, as the major shareholder for all of these corporations, is going to say, sure, we can import as much as you want from China. Let's build that sucker up and get all our products cheap, and we don't have any regulations there, and we can pollute the heck out of China, we can ruin their air quality, you know, we can ruin their people, we can leave radiation and other things.
Sounds like a eugenics operation to me.
Well, almost. I mean, if you think about it, it really, I don't know about eugenics, but it's definitely a you know, I think there's
genocide.
It's a definite plan to destroy, you know, well, let's take communism, as we were talking about earlier. The 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto, one of my blog entries, is already law in the United States, okay? The taking away of property ownership, it's gone already. It was gone a long time ago. In fact, I've got congressional record that I can read you that actually proves that. Public schooling is a Communist Manifesto, one of the 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto. We can go on and on. Every single plank has been made into law in the United States, either by presidential directive, executive order, which are just direct laws from our king, the president, or through Congress, or through these acts that are created. So we are already a people don't understand this, but we are already a communist country, whereas, you know, and you can really parallel China to that, because, you know, you think all the people in China are communists? No, there's maybe 200 people there that are in power that are communists. Everybody else is just trying to live on a dollar a day, essentially. You know, just like in America, you think everybody in America is Democrat because we have a Democratic party in power? No, not at all. In fact, most people have no idea what they are. They just side with whatever party sounds the best to them, whichever candidate is best looking or wears the fanciest suits or doesn't have the media tearing them apart. I mean, you know, the system is so ridiculous.
I think it's much simpler than how they look and all of that kind of stuff, because as far as I'm concerned, they all look the same. It's how much funding they've got. For example, Barack Obama's election campaign had twice the campaign contribution as John McCain from the same big banks and corporations, which you've just revealed are on the list of government corporations.
Absolutely. So, well, yeah, and that's, you know, that's one of the things that when I met Walter Burian of CAFR1.com, man, he was explaining this stuff to me. That was the first thing that came to mind. I said, so are you telling me that the government is actually, you know, there's laws that say how much money can go to a campaign from government and from individuals and from corporations. So are you telling me that government is actually contributing money to their own campaign through their corporations that they own? Is that how it works? And he said, wow, yeah, I hadn't thought of that. But, yeah, that's basically what we have. All these contributions that are coming from corporations, from the big lobbies and stuff, those lobbies are simply representing government-owned corporations. And when I say government-owned, they're not owned as you and me and anyone else in other countries with pension funds and investments can own part of that company. But you'll see that the majority stockholder, in almost every case, is going to be the United States. And if it's not, we'll probably attack your country so that we can get it. I mean, that's basically what we're talking about.
Yeah, it's mafioso wonderland. It's called the USSA, coming to a Walmart near you. You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show, my very special, fabulous, fantastic, and all-round nice guy, Clint Richardson, from realityblogger.com. And we'll be right back after the break.
We got to change the way we see the problem if we're gonna fix this place. My living soul don't care about the color of your face. Unite and roll, respect our right to live here on the land. It's Dino, I'm Latino, Tonga, we don't know the banks. The
power
does so where do you understand?
So let me get this broken down for you, ladies and gentlemen. Let's sum up one final segment with the fabulous Cringe. Chris Richardson from realityblogger.com. That's blogger with one G.
A blogger.
Luger. It's like, no, no, go and eat some scones and look at realityblogger.com. Okay, as the song was suggesting, the way that we see the problems and the way that we want to fix this place. Now, you're running for president, aren't you?
I happen to be, yes.
Okay, a Republican or Democrat?
Oh, that would be neither, actually. The name of my, I'm all right, well, we'll just get into it. I don't have a political party because I don't believe that a private corporation should be running government. So anybody that's affiliated with the Democratic, Republican, Libertarian, any other type of party is really supporting a private corporation, a private association to become their leader, which doesn't make real sense to me. And so my party is the unincorporated non-party, if you can call it a party. And the whole purpose, you know, I'm not doing this because it's fun or because it's just something to do. No, because what I realized is that we are a bunch of minorities. We've got the Libertarian Party. We've got a bunch of fools following Ron Paul, who I believe is a big fraud. Even though I'd like him to be in my cabinet because I think he's a good guy who's just in a position where he cannot be good because he would get killed or his family would get killed or he'd be found with a prostitute the next day. Basically, what I'm trying to do is I'm saying, okay, I'm going to run for president, but you're not really electing me. No, you're going to elect a guy who's going to then appoint all of these people. And I'm going to name my cabinet first thing. So I'm going to have people like Edwin Vieira, who is a constitutional, you know, basically the constitutional scholar, constitutional attorney, as attorney general. I'm going to put people like Catherine Austin Fitz, who are in business, who understand what's going on. Ron Paul, I think, should be in charge of what he's good at, which is health. You know, and on down the line, we got Chuck Baldwin in the Constitution Party, who I think is a very, very wonderful man. I've got, I can go down the list, I guess, but the point is, I want to create a political, well, I call it a non-party or an un-campaign, where all of us, all of these parties get together as one ticket, and that is who you're electing for president. You know, all these people will be appointed in their proper positions, and so going back to what was originally intended with the country here, which was a republic form of government. Now, in a republic form of government, everybody has a say. Everybody has representation. So even if you're a minority of one person, your voice needs to be heard. So if we have a presidential staff that is not all Republican or all Democrat, neither of which have the people's interest in heart because they are a private corporation, if we have all of these groups together on one ticket, then it will be pretty much impossible to carry on the way we're carrying on, because all of a sudden, if all of these people have a voice and all of these people are the ones that are deciding what should be law and what should be taken away, that is so completely invaluable to the people and only valuable to the corporate structure. If those people all got together in the same, you know, government, and we had a council instead of just one guy.
Hold on a second. You're talking about a political dirty dozen.
Well, yeah, I suppose you could put it that way. What people don't understand is that, you know, every 4 years we elect a new president. The vice president really isn't elected because he's just attached to the person. He's appointed by the president that's running. So we have one person who is elected to office. And then that one person, we are giving permission by acquiescing to his attainment of the office through our ridiculous voting process. We're telling that person that he can then appoint the entire federal government. That, to me, has nothing to do with an election. That is just, you know, let's change kings every 4 years or maybe every 8 years. That's ridiculous. So by getting up there and saying, hey, you know, I'm going to tell you exactly who I'm going to appoint to each position before I even start campaigning, or uncampaigning, as I like to say. And then all these people, you know, I guess the point of this is that this is so ridiculous. What the hell am I thinking? running for president, some stupid kid who you know, I have nothing except knowledge to share. And so the ridiculousness of it and the fact that I'm saying, you know, here's my cabinet, you should really see who these people are and how they'll represent you and not government interests and corporate interests, I think it just might work, not to win the presidency, but to really wake people up and actually educate people. Tell them I can't win. I can't win because the voting structure is completely rigged. I can't win, but I'm going to run anyway, and I'm going to make you understand why I can't win. You know, it makes sense.
That would be the most interesting campaign pledge in American history. Vote for me. I can't win.
Absolutely. But don't you think that because it's so ridiculous that it actually will be like, what is this guy talking about? I would want to go and see what this guy has to say. And that's what I'm hoping for, you know?
The elections are a joke, right? So why not make your campaign into a joke, and then everybody will vote for you because they're in the spirit of comedy, because that's how hilarious elections are these days.
Absolutely, but, you know, the consequence is if I would actually, you know, I'd be dead before I got to office, of course, but if I were to actually succeed at this and actually do, if you actually read what I'm talking about doing, you'll see that it is no joke whatsoever. I'm actually writing everything that needs to happen. A good example is hemp. Hemp can save the world. And the United States got rid of hemp real quick. And instead, you know, the head of DuPont became, or was, I should say, a senator. And, you know, hemp was completely destroyed so that companies like DuPont and other corporations could make all the paper and the fuel. People have to look at hemp because hemp literally could save the whole economy. It would get rid of subsidies. It would get rid of so much. It's the most beautiful thing I've ever learned is hemp, and it's just a weed. It can be harvested 3 times a year. It's the most amazing plant, and yet government burned the fields, all the hemp fields, around the world after World War II because they did not want that plant to be used. It could replace oil. It can replace, I mean, it's just the most amazing food. It's also nutritious. I mean, amazing, amazing. So things like this, I want to get this information out, and this is the best way that I can think of. My only problem is money. I do everything I do for free, so I guess I'm going to have to start asking for uncampaigned donations at some point.
Well, you're going to have to start selling DVDs, mate.
Well, yeah, you know, the reason I didn't do that is because I don't want to accept any money, because I want to come from a place that's completely free from any type of control or influence whatsoever. In other words, if you're going to donate something to me, you're donating to me on behalf of what I'm doing, and you will have no say in what is done with that money or how it's going to be spent. And in the future, you will not get anything for that money. And trying to convince people that, no, if you're going to do this, you're not doing it for a tax write-off. You're doing it because you really understand what I'm doing here, and you agree with me, and you actually think this might work, at least as a wake-up tool, you know, an educational tool. So I'm not taking money because I don't want to be involved with anybody. Who knows what people are.
You're talking about basically eliminating the idea of having lobbyists to whom the president is beholden.
Absolutely.
Because we all know that as soon as somebody starts giving you money in a political campaign, they'll promise you the earth and all the sunshine in the universe, and they'll give you a light bulb instead.
Yeah. So why would you contribute to a guy who's going to, like, you know, who's going to represent a corporation, or who has, like, Dick Cheney with his $40 million of Halliburton stock? Of course Halliburton's going to get all the no-bid contracts, you know? A Bush with his oil connections. Of course oil companies are going to reap huge profits. It doesn't make sense. And here I am. Now, again, I was making almost $100,000 when I was in Hollywood. I gave that up with some weird pre-cognizance that I needed to give it up. And since, I have completely eradicated all connections to everything. I have no stock. I have no corporate interest whatsoever. The only interest that I have is to the people. That's it. I have an interest in getting rid of this tyranny that is upon us. And after listening for years to radio shows and reading all that I've read, the only solution that I can see is to get in, take control of the federal government, and abolish about 9/10 of the federal government. That's really the only solution, because right now, the president is king, as I said earlier, Act of 1933. Get rid of that. Bring us back into an actual republic, a constitutional republic. And that's the idea.
Exactly. I say turn the country into a dictatorship so that you can dictate that there's no longer a dictator. A grand
exactly.
idea.
Isn't it great? It's just such a fantastic, you know, irony that that's what I'm trying to do. And you're exactly right. That's exactly what I want to do.
All right. Thank you.
Maybe it's crazy. I don't know.
Well, thank you very much, Clint, for sharing that with us. Vote for him, ladies and gentlemen. The We Will Not Win Party.
No, I got a website up. It's just not up yet. It's Clint4P. So Clint, the number 4, the letter P.com.
All right. Thank you very much.
Hey,
all
thanks.
Right. And we'll be back next hour. Thank you very much. Bye. Welcome back to hour number 2 of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Proudly brought to you with GorillaMedia.co.nz, New Zealand's alternative media. And yeah, man, it's time for another guest. Another fabulous, remarkably stupendous guest by the name of Sterling Allen, who joins us now via phone from the former USSA. Sterling, welcome to the Vinnie Eastwood Show.
USSA, huh?
If it ain't it now, it soon will be.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, I used to be proud of the United States of America, and I do not feel any sense of pride in where this country's at right now. It's in the dredge. It's in the gutter.
Well, you're absolutely not alone. There are record amounts of Americans rescinding their citizenship. I think my producer told me last year, this is interesting, the average amount of citizenships that get rescinded each year is about 10,000. And last year, it was something like 1 or 2 million.
Wow.
Yeah, like people are fleeing, you know. It's almost as if the extradition laws that Barack Obama signed into law and the you can kill American citizens on site anywhere in the world with presidential authority laws were passed in. Everybody's like, hey, maybe it's not a good idea to be a citizen of this country anymore because they could just kill me wherever I am.
Yeah. Well, hopefully some of the stuff that we're talking about in our energy sector can help turn things around, not only for the United States, but for the world, in empowering the people to be able to stand up and do their own thing and not be beholden anymore to the central corrupt authority, but to be able to have a power device in their own garage that powers their house continuously. You know, once you've got the device, you're good to go. Same thing for your car. You never have to stop for fuel. Your appliances all are self-powered. that's the world that we're headed to, and I see some of these technologies beginning to come out possibly even this year.
So let's talk about it. Energy itself. What is energy in terms of, well, anything really? I mean, it's the lifeblood of the economy, of life itself pretty much at the moment, isn't it?
Well, if you go back 1,000 years when people were living off the land, using tools and stuff, it said that today the average person on the planet has the equivalent of 700 slaves working for them because of how much energy does for us in terms of making life easier. Everything from the lights, the power that enables us to go down the road and carry a sack full of groceries. Whereas before, if you had to lift on and walk and do all that stuff, you know, you're talking 700 slaves to do the work that one person's able to do nowadays because of all the modern technology and conveniences that we have. And so it's no small matter when that energy is controlled by the central authority, because now they turn us into their slaves. We're beholden to them. We answer to them. And if they raise the price of gas, then we all go, ouch. Whereas if we can get an energy source that pulls energy freely from the environment without going through some meter that is controlled by some central corrupt authority, and we're able to just harness it ubiquitously, inexhaustibly from the environment without destroying the environment, then imagine the empowerment. And to add to that, they say that, you know, given all things, you know, the same in terms of modern society, when a person is working for somebody else, like a slave, as opposed to if they're doing something that they love, that they want to do, they're 7 times more productive doing what they want to do and what they enjoy. And so take modern society, and once we're enabled to do what we want to do because we don't have to sweat and labor just to get food on our table to support the central authority that's controlling us, once we can start doing what we're really here to do and what we're good at, society will be so much more productive and happy.
Well, it'll be a heck of a lot more productive and happy if it doesn't have to buy gas at something like $2 a litre.
Yeah.
You know, and apparently the big three oil companies, they just got around in a round table and they say, hey guys, we control a lot of the oil in this country and a lot of the refineries, but there's still some oil and some refineries that we don't control yet. So let's buy them and shut them down and force an artificial bottleneck to make all the gas really expensive for everybody so we could loot the entire economy and crash it independently.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like the only reason why they're capable of doing such a thing is because they've managed to suppress every single form of alternative technology that would rise to challenge them. Really rise to challenge them that they don't control already.
You know what's amazing, though, is that as I look at this time in history right now, I see the central authority, the corrupt powers that be, as kind of in their last hurrah. This is... They're on their way out. It's not that they're near the point of losing control yet, but they're approaching that point. As the good people of the earth are rising up, getting empowered, waking up to what's going on, you know, our destiny is to be an enlightened people, not a centrally controlled through a corrupt dictatorship people. That's not our destiny. And so what's happening is I compare it to like an abusive husband with a wife. The husband represents the tyranny that is over and in control of us right now, whereas the wife is like this abused victim who's, you know, empowered and rising up and waking up to the power within her. And the husband, as he's about to lose control, is throwing things around the house. He's pulling a shotgun out. It's a very, very dangerous time. But it's also a very empowering time as she finally steps into who she is and she says, I've had enough. I'm out of here. And she leaves. And that's kind of the way I look at it. And it really fits. in terms of how people are behaving. For example, you had this guy, the head of the IMF, who was caught for raping some woman. That obviously was a setup, because those guys are doing that kind of stuff all the time, and somehow they decided that they're going to start, you know, making some examples of some people, maybe some infighting going on by the powers that be. But we're going to see more and more that the good guys are going to start winning and the bad guys are going to start losing. Up till now, the bad guys have been winning most of the time, and the good guys have been losing a lot of the time. But that ratio is going to change. We're going to start winning more, and they're going to start winning less. And so I see us in a major transition time as we go from the corrupt system that we're in now to a more enlightened system. And energy, I see, as being empowering that whole process, that transition. It'll be the physical means that enables us to survive and to not completely collapse.
So let's give us some examples. What kind of energy devices are we talking about here that would revolutionize mankind and take us into some kind of a golden age through cheap and abundant energy?
Okay. Yeah, on our homepage, if you go to freeenergynews.com, which is the easiest domain name to remember, we own several domains, but that one will dump you to the homepage at pezwiki.com, which is the Wikipedia of free energy. And we have a listing of the top five exotic free energy technologies. And the first one on the list is by a guy named Andrea Rossi of Italy. He's got a cold fusion reactor that is cranking out anywhere between 2.5 and 10 kilowatts. That's a lot of power, by the way. The typical home in America, for example, could run easily on 1 kilowatt. So a 10-kilowatt device is enough to power 10 houses if you could store that energy and, you know, balance out between peak load and low load at night when you're sleeping, nothing's happening.
Hold on a second. What if they miniaturized the device so that it was one-tenth the size, so somebody could buy one of these and it would power their whole home forever?
Well, we'll see that kind of stuff. You know, we'll see the kind of devices that will be the size that are necessary. But just to give you an example of the size and cost of this cold fusion technology, and by the way, these guys have demonstrated and proven their technology in a number of independent settings, and we can talk about that more in a minute. But just to say that they have been validated, are in process of being validated. And the story we published today is that they licensed a U.S. company to roll out these in America. They've got a company to roll out the technology in out of Greece. But a 2.5 kilowatt device, which is about 2.5 times what you need on average for the typical home, is about the size. It's smaller than the size of your fist, the reaction chamber that does all the magic. It has hydrogen and nickel inside of it, and they put it under pressure and a bit of temperature, and they have a proprietary catalyst in there, and there's a nuclear reaction that's going on that doesn't involve radioactivity in terms of there's no radioactive substances going in, and there are no radioactive substances coming out. There may be some gamma emissions that can be shielded by lead easily on the device so it's not dangerous to be around it. But this device is cranking out 2.5 kilowatts of energy, and it's running on like 50 watts to get it up and maintain it at the temperature it needs. 50 watts to run it, and it's producing 2.5 kilowatts. And so we're talking, that's 100-plus times over unity. That's like, the amount of energy it takes to keep it going versus how much it's producing. And so it's like, on your car, you've got the starter motor that you got to turn the engine over to get it going. Once it's going, it runs, and it's able to recharge the battery that powered the starter motor. So, and they envision a scenario like that. And the price point of this cold fusion technology is going to be 1 cent per kilowatt hour. Now, to give that into context for those who might not appreciate that, in Utah, we have about the cheapest energy on the planet. It's 4 cents a kilowatt hour wholesale. That's four times more expensive than what this would cost for this cold fusion energy. And so we're talking something that's much more compact, and the fuel, it takes very little fuel to run this thing. You could pack the reactor and it would run for 6 months before you'd have to recharge it, so to speak. And the hydrogen is very cheap, and nickel is very cheap. And so the fuel price are basically negligible, and you're getting tons of energy out of it. So that's one of the technologies that is in process of emerging, and they're going to have their first 1 megawatt power plant ready to go in October. It's going to be actually a production facility where they will be making 600,000 of these units a year, powered by their own technology. And also they licensed a company in the United States, that's our story today in our news, to do the same thing, to build a 1 megawatt power plant or a 1 megawatt device that will power the a plant here to do the same thing, to crank these things out here. And of course the demand is going to be much greater than that, and these guys will roll it out as quick as they can. But that's a very exciting technology, and it's here and it's now and it's emerging this year.
Well, I think that would be something in this economy, with everybody's energy prices soaring out of control, would sell very well. And I think that would be a very good idea if people are now capable of marketing and making money from devices that actually help people and destroy the current predator establishment.
Yeah.
You know, that's what the free market should have been. And it's been perverted and controlled and distorted, so that technologies like this don't get released until now. But maybe an accident will happen. I hope not. And I, you know, perish the thought. But I'm pretty sure that you know in your field of expertise that it does happen.
Well, the thing is, with this guy, he's not the only one that knows how to do this. And he actually has several people who are able to, if something happens to him, they pick up where he left off. And so if they take him out, they're going to have a hydra on their hand, where you cut off one head and you have 10 that take its place. So they're not going to be well served by trying to eliminate him.
Okay, that's good. That's good. Because I always said that when you come up with a really brilliant technology, it needs to become as public and as widely spread as humanly possible, as quickly as possible. So therefore, you completely eliminate the reason to try and kill you.
Yeah.
You know, like the cat's already out of the bag. And so what we're coming to here, and you talked about this point in history where we're going to start winning and the enemy's going to start losing sort of thing. And I think we've already gotten to that point. I think we've already won, but we're just going through the motions here, okay? Like, it's almost as if humanity in general has figured out something. They've figured out the chinks in the enemy's armor, kind of like the 100th monkey syndrome, and everybody's fighting in all these millions of different ways simultaneously against the same enemy, which is tyranny, which is slavery. And they're winning in every single conceivable way. And it's very exciting time to be alive. Some people think that it's because we've got this Fukushima and all these earthquakes and all these police state measures coming in that, oh, life is terrible. And I've got news for you. Life's always been terrible like that. Somebody evil has always tried to take control. And every generation has their boogeyman. And, you know, conveniently, our generation's boogeyman is now dead. Allegedly. A very special guest live from the United States joins me in the after the break. Welcome back. Oh, yes. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that's all about organized crime. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulous fluoridated capital of the slave island chained nation of New Zealand. That's Auckland. Now, my very special guest, Sterling Allen, joins me from the USSA. Welcome back.
Nice to be back.
Let's talk about what the possible implications are. Now, how would it reform the economy? I mean, in straight terms, we're talking about a lot of power plants can be shut down now, and people can start, you know, doing other jobs, I guess.
Yeah, basically, if you think about it, Gerald Celente talks about the productive capacity, which basically saved us out of the recession back in the 80s. The internet came along, and all of the different jobs and opportunities that arose with that dug us out of that hole we were in. And he was asked by Alex Jones about a year ago, when he was talking about all these things that are going wrong. You know, it's a very scary picture that he paints, and anyone who has any kind of prophetic insight is just looking at the future. There's a lot of things that can go bad and are going bad. And he asked the question, well, what could we do? Is there anything that could turn this around or keep this from being as bad as it could be otherwise? And he said, yes, there is. Something that can come along and give us a productive capacity. And he specifically mentioned that he saw the emergence of a breakthrough energy technology that goes beyond just solar, wind, geothermal, kind of the conventionals, something that's a true breakthrough. And when he said that, I said, yay, that's what we're doing. That's what we're tracking, is those kinds of technologies. And so I sent them an email and said, hey, you got to keep an eye on what we've got going here. And sure enough, they started doing that. And, you know, I interviewed with one of his guys last December as part of a 2011 trends research forecast. And he interviewed myself and several other people in the industry. And when he's mentioned, when he gave his 2011 prediction, he mentioned breakthrough power as being one of the bright spots in a very bleak future. And he specifically mentioned this Rossi cold fusion as something which people should keep an eye on, which could really help turn things around. Because it, you know, not only does it give you a physical means of turning things around, but it also gives hope. It's a ray of light in an otherwise darkened arena, and that hope can really do a lot for people. And it's not just the one technology. There are actually several technologies that are in process of emerging that within a year will be available for purchase by customers worldwide.
Well, that is something that will fully make the entire world a much better place, I think. Free energy. I mean, wouldn't it put a kind of like an end to war, because nobody would have to like go overseas to steal their energy reserves?
Yep. It also gets rid of the reason for war, which is the, you know, one of the reasons that we go to war is because right now we are supporting the oil industry, which is supporting the oil oligarchy, and all the corrupt powers that be are getting very rich off of these modalities, the polluting energy modalities. It helps keep them in power. And if we make those obsolete, we also make them obsolete.
Well, I suppose there's an old quote, isn't there? In order to create... Oh, hold on a second. If you want to change the system, don't run in opposition to it. Create another system that makes the existing one obsolete.
Yeah. And so one of the points I love to make, especially with an audience such as yours, is that supporting free energy is an act of revolution. It is the modern revolution to empower and to give us the very physical means of power to support a new kind of society that is independent and is not dependent or codependent with the corrupt powers that be. You're able to break free from that corruption.
One thing that I was talking about with a friend of mine the other day was that you can't actually use the system to get rid of the system, kind of thing. Like you can't be elected into office to change everything. And I'm thinking that there's an awful lot of extra political forces that people can put into motion which actually influence politics without having to run for it, you know. And I was thinking, you know, people manipulate the currency. People stifle creativity. They propagandize people. So that would probably mean that information, technology, and outreach, you know, through airwaves and such like that, are probably the most powerful forces after the force of government itself. So if you've got the ability to create something in those fields, which has, you know, potentially an awful lot of influence as to the current state of being to the human condition, I say, chips fall where they may, go for it, do it. Because I think the human experience is here to be experienced, not subjugated to the ruling thoughts of a few eugenicist slime bags.
One thing that's very telling is this Rossi cold fusion technology has a very, very good reputation among people who have been tracking free energy technologies for years looking for something like this to come along. They're very hopeful about it and positive about it. There's very little skepticism as these guys have gone through the rigors of getting third-party validation, university validation. The Skeptic Society of Switzerland went and visited them and gave them a thumbs up, for example. So these guys have a very real technology, but what's amazing is the mainstream press is totally ignoring them. Not a hardly a whisper about it. They gave just a few news sources gave just kind of a sideways glance back in January when they first did the press conference. But other than that, the mainstream media in the U.S. has been totally silent on this Rossi cold fusion. And this is huge, absolutely huge. And the longer they take to get on the bandwagon, the more people are going to be pissed off at them for having no vision. It's like, where do you guys have your head? This is they're going to see. It's going to become so obvious that the mainstream press is absolutely a lapdog of the corrupt powers that be, and the news mainstream or the alternative media is going to get more and more credible, and people are going to say, well, what else? What else is there that they are saying is impossible? The mainstream scientific world has been totally poo-pooing cold fusion for 23 years now, ever since the announcement just about. They've been calling it junk science. They've been calling it, crackpot, people that are involved in that. And yet here you got a guy who's manufacturing devices 2.5 kilowatts. These are commercial versions of a technology that they can sell.
Well, like all government policy based on a lie. and it's like when you have a look at the energy industry itself, you know, who owns all these massive energy corporations like GE and all of that, you know? What kind of technologies have they got that they're not telling anybody about? Apparently, the Learjet Corporation was experimenting with electrogravitics in the 40s, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like, whoa, where is all this stuff gone? Has it all been, like, locked up in government vaults or something? It's like, the public's not ready for this. And in reality, what they're saying is, we're not really ready to give up power yet.
Yeah, a lot of those UFO sightings you see are most likely craft of our own origin, technology that are sequestered by the black ops and powers that be. And I see what's going to happen in the next few years is not only are we going to be able to make those technologies for the layperson, but we may actually surpass these guys in short order of time, because once you get the creative capacity of the human race going at this, it's just going to go screaming.
Yeah, well, you know, I think the human race is basically just like a great big hound dog that's like very, very hungry and like being held back by a leash, you know? Let that puppy go, mate.
Yeah, to illustrate how backwards and even egotistical the energy industry is, on our homepage at freeenergynews.com, we've got the following chart. To illustrate, on average, industries, on average, all industries combined spend 3.1% of their budget on research and development, okay? That doesn't seem like very much. If you look at the communications industry, they spend 25% of their budget on research and development. And look at all the stuff they come up with, all these cool Androids and other devices that are just awesome. The pharmaceutical industry spends like, 11-14% of their budget on research and development. Guess how much the energy industry spends on research and development?
I don't know. I'd be guessing in the hundreds of billions.
No, not in dollars, but in percentage of their budget, of how much money they have to spend, how much of their budget in the industry average is 3.1%.
I'll probably say 63%.
0.3%. The energy industry spends 0.3% of their budget on research and development.
That's why I love the Gulf of Mexico. It's a constant reminder that we've got people who don't know what they're doing. Or rather, if they do know what they're doing, they're not doing something nice.
Yeah. And you know that they're spending at least that much money on suppressing and, putting up obstacles against technologies that are going to make life difficult for them.
How pervasive are they? I mean, are we talking about, because I know that the government and corporations are all tied together and, there's a lot of private investment in security agencies and things of that nature. But how deep does it really go? And do you think that they'll let you get away with it, kind of thing? I mean, I presume there'll be some kind of propaganda demonizing campaign against this kind of technology when it comes out, just like they did to Nikola Tesla when he came up with alternating current. They say, "Oh, it'll blow up everything; the whole world will crack in two."
Yeah, of course they'll whine and complain, but you know, these technologies have been emerging for a century. You know, Nikola Tesla came up with some really cool stuff that was rejected in his day, and there have been other inventors who have come along with really great technology that would run cars much more efficiently than what we do, antigravitics, those types of things which have come along. And some of those have been sequestered and used for black op purposes, but at some point, here's an analogy that I think is fitting to a certain extent. It's the sperm and egg analogy. You've got the egg in there, and it's not just one sperm that is required to impregnate the egg. You have millions of sperms that are swimming around, and it takes thousands of sperms to break down the outer layer of the egg until you can get to the point where it's thin enough that one can make it through. And then once one gets through, then the magic begins and the egg is starts going through mitosis and you've got the process has begun. In the same way, I like to think that all these inventors who have come along with all these different claims are like the thousands of sperm that are trying to get in the egg. But once, all their efforts are not in vain. At some point, because of all the effort that's gone before, it's going to make it so that one of these sperm can get in finally. And all it's going to take is one. Once one makes it, the world's going to know that what science has been saying is impossible is not impossible, and you will unleash a creative deluge on the planet as people wake up to the possibilities and jump all over it. And so, you know, we'll be pregnant, so to speak, as a society. You know, there are some weaknesses in that analogy. One of the weaknesses is that it's not going to be just one technology. There are a number of technologies that are ready to go that are most likely going to be in market within a year from now. It's not just going to be the cold fusion. It's not just going to be this, you know, some other one that comes along. There are going to be several emerging all at once. It's going to be very exciting.
My very special guest is Sterling Allen from FreeEnergyNews.com. We'll be right back after this very short break at the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com. It's Vinnie with a Y because it's the most important question. Final segment here for today's show, and it's been a rip-roaring one. I can vouch for that. My very special guest, Sterling Allen, joins us from the USSA. Welcome back.
Yeah, you know, you'd mentioned earlier in the program that, you know, quite a few people are getting out of the United States. I'm one of the people that plans on digging in my heels and trying to make a go of it here to help hold the fort down, so to speak. We're doing an intentional community here in Utah, hoping to have some of these free energy devices power in our community and others around the world. That would be one of my first priorities for when these things emerge, is to get into those types of situations. People that are off grid already have that mentality, are ready to go, and then, you know, it can go from there.
What if you had like a community reactor, something that's capable of powering an entire independent township of, say, 20,000 people?
Well, that's one thing that's cool about the variety of technologies coming out, is that some of them, address the micro power level. For example, you could power the individual components of a circuit board, so you don't even need a battery, because each component is being powered ubiquitously and inexhaustibly from the vacuum. So you've got a little circuit size or even something you can print on a circuit board that powers it for super cheap. And I know of such a technology. I'm not speaking hypothetically. We're looking at 9 months before that starts emerging. So that's on the small end. And on the large end, you have some technologies that are addressing like 100 kilowatts, a megawatt. And so we'll see the gamut. And whatever application you have, whether it's powering a car or powering a cell phone or powering a substation in a neighborhood, we'll see the devices coming out that will address those needs.
Well, this is the thing. It's about addressing the needs of the people, addressing the needs of the community. And one thing I was thinking about, in light of recent disasters where there have been massive power outages and things of that nature, my assumption is that if there was no actual power grid, but every home had its own independent power supply, you wouldn't ever have those problems again.
That's right. So there's a huge security issue increase in security, national security, if you have these devices, because you're no longer vulnerable like that. And even from a power grid point of view, if your backup generators that pump the cooling water are powered by free energy devices and are not don't have to be hooked to the grid, all the better. When you know, if you have disruptions of the local power line, you can still power your backup power to keep things from melting down. Of course, we want to get away from those technologies as soon as possible. And once these free energy devices start coming out, those will be rendered obsolete pretty quick, but not immediately. It's not going to be overnight. You know, it'll take a few years to transition into 100% these types of devices powering everything that we have in society.
I think making it marketable and consumeristic as possible, I think, will certainly grease the wheels in that respect. You know, come to this show, buy it online. You know, have people with sandwich boards out the street. Free energy device right here. You know.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that I would just love to see, and have been pushing for all these years, is somebody to open source a technology of this ilk, so that you could download a set of plans, source the materials, put it together, and voila, you've got a free energy device. And you can set up cottage industries around the world, making these things, distributing them, because not everyone's going to want to make one for themselves. They're going to want to go buy one. They don't have the skills or the resources necessary. But there are inventors who are actually talking along these lines. And we've had a number of open source projects over the years that have helped people understand and learn the ropes about these new energy modalities, so that when the true breakthroughs do come along, you have a whole set of people, millions of people around the world, who know what you're talking about because they played with these free energy device plans, little kits and stuff that we've had out. I know of a guy who wants to open source a magnet motor. That would be just powered by magnets. And so it'd be a matter of building the framework and there'd be some machining involved. But, you know, you get your local machinists to make those things, and you have another person assembling, another person, doing the marketing, et cetera. And this could happen all over the planet. And so rather than taking 50 years to reach market penetration, with the internet and with open sourcing, it could take 3 to 5 years to have market penetration.
Well, this is the thing. If you're going to take the fight to your enemy, you need to give the weapon to as many people as you can, right? And that's what I feel. It's the war against the control of energy. Okay, energy is not meant for a select few to control and dictate to us what the price or the mechanism should be. Okay, we should be able to have a choice, and we've got plenty of creative people, even right here in New Zealand, that are creating better technologies than we're currently using in their back shed on a shoestring budget. Okay, human creativity has no freaking end, and for some reason, everybody still goes around driving in a petrol car ever since 1900 and whatnot. They've been using the internal combustion engine. Are you freaking kidding me?
Yeah, and that's one thing that's really cool about open sourcing too, is from a security point of view of the inventor, once you put the plans out on the internet, there's no stopping it. You can't go and kill the inventor and keep it from going forward because now nobody knows how to do it. Once you publish those plans on the web, now the genie's out of the bottle, so to speak.
Well, that actually brings us to an interesting point. What do you make of those people who are researchers, inventors, / whistleblowers who wish to, fight on behalf of their own cause, but they don't release all their information?
Yeah, I see that a lot, actually. People who will give you 95% of what you need to know, but there's that last 5% that without that information, you might as well not have any of the information.
It's like a pyramid without a capstone.
Yeah. But then again, you still have somebody who's going to come along and may have the same inspiration. I see that the forces behind, the spiritual forces who are looking over us, whether you want to call them angels or universal spirit or whatever, I see them as having plan A, B, and C. And so if one inventor gets greedy and only discloses 95%, I could see if somebody else could come along and come up with the last 5%. So maybe it's not necessarily a bad thing to only give 95%, because at least you've gone that far. Somebody else can get the inspiration to finish up the plans, and then you open source it, and then you have all these people around the world figuring out ways to improve the design, to apply it to all the zillions of applications, from small to big, using different, you know, in New Zealand you might have a certain type of screw that works really well with it, but we don't have those screws in the United States, and so we have to get another source for those, and there may be a certain type of, you know, just by open sourcing it, you cut through all kinds of problems in really quick speed.
Because it's collaboration with many minds, you know. And this is the thing about open sourcing in terms of technology, or even I think that political parties and governments, indeed voting, should be open source. Everybody can just go into a big room and collaborate.
Yeah. We couldn't do collective voting in the past because we didn't have the technology, but now we just do it. Log into our Facebook account and vote on the latest political poll. We may see a different kind of politics emerge in the future.
I think it might be a brighter politics, one where everybody actually does have a role, as opposed to just being told they've got a role when they got the two most highly banker-funded candidates to vote for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Look at how much traction Ron Paul has been able to get through alternative media, where he's now a candidate that the mainstream media is even paying attention to because of all the attention and support he's gotten from the alternative media. So, yeah, it's certainly we're showing our strength in that one, for example.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You can't turn around without hearing Ron Paul, Ron Paul, Ron Paul, okay? No, seriously. In fact, I have a funny story. This morning, I tuned into Freedom Files just before it came on my show, and I say, what's James? And I thought to myself, okay, what's James going to be talking about today? And I said, it's probably going to be Ron Paul. And then so the first thing he says is, and the allure of Ron Paul is that he has the ability to unite all of the different factions. I don't know whether you're Republican, Democrat, Libertarian, whatever, you can get behind Ron Paul. And I just doubled over in tears laughing, man, because it's so funny how awesome Ron Paul is that everybody's talking about him all the time.
Yeah. Hey, I have to tell you, a little toot my own horn, back in 2004, I started the campaign, actually in 2002, to draft Ron Paul as president for 2004. And so that shows you how far ahead of the curve I was on that. And in the same way, we're ahead of the curve on energy. So pay attention to freeenergynews.com.
Okay, thank you very much. Sterling Allen from freeenergynews.com. Ladies and gentlemen, check it out on the web. And you can catch an archive to this show at AmericanFreedomRadio.com and TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com. And we'll catch you again sometimes, ladies and gentlemen. You know, drop by again.